in here. Good, okay. I think for the purposes of the shiur, if you have an Ala Nisim in front of you, we're going to learn through the Peirush of the Tefillah. It'll be helpful. Yitz Hashem. I don't know if you spend any time in airport lounges. You spend hours there, sometimes waiting for a plane, but maybe the thought has once crossed your mind, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam create Mexicans like they look, and Swedish people like they look, and I can recognize an Englishman, how they look, and you begin to ask yourself, what was the reason why there are so many different nations in the world, in the different looks and cultures and the way they appear? I have no idea why. I have no idea. You ask yourself, why? What's the purpose of a Chinaman, a Pakistani, an Indian, Australian? But when it comes to Klal Yisrael, there are no doubts why we were created. There's no hesitation. The word Yehudi means lahoidos, to appreciate, to thank. And therefore, the tachlis of a Yehudi is lahoidos. Isn't that why Yehuda was called Ato Yoducha Achecha? You acknowledged, you recognized, he admitted, and therefore, the raison d'etre, the whole basis of a Jew is to be makir, to appreciate, to recognize Hashem in every action of your life. That's why we have, as we had the whole Shia on the 100 brachas a day, it's to recognize Hashem. The Chofetz Chaim in Mishnah Berura on Hilchos Chanukah explains that is the reason for Chanukah. Lehoidos ulahalel l'shimcha hagodol. All Yom Tovim are like that. Vatiten lonu Hashem Elokeinu be'ahavo es yoim chag ha-pesach hazeh, chag ha-shvuos hazeh. Don't we keep on saying all the time, we recognize, we appreciate, and therefore the nature of a Jew, especially when it comes to Yom Tov time, is on the theme of appreciation, to recognize what Hashem has done for us. That is on our passport. A Yehudi is moideh, to recognize, to appreciate. Therefore, that is why Al HaNisim is recorded in the Brocha of Hoidor in Moedim. The same is with benching. After Noideh Lecha, we have Al HaNisim. It's in this Brocha. Al HaNisim features in Birchas Hoidor. Let's have a look at the title. The Al HaNisim. The word Nisim in this context means for the hidden miracles of which we are unaware of. Al HaNisim, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu conducts the life of a Jew, there are many hidden miracles. Al HaPulkon refers to the redemption. In Chazal, it specifically means the Sa'ar, Shelmaila, of the other nations. Every nation has a Sa'ar. After Migdal Bovel, after all the 70 nations were created, each nation came out with a minister, a Sa'ar. Not like us. We have Hashem Elokeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks after us. And the definition, say Chazal, of Pulkon, he means the redemption from the Sa'ar of the Umos HaOlam, whether it was Yavon, whether it was Babylon, whether it was Greece, whether it was Spain, whether it was Germany. Pulkon refers to redemption from the Sa'ar of that nation. Gvurois in this context refers to Nisim Gluyim, the revealed miracles, those which we see, which we are aware of. That's the meaning of the word gevurois. Chuois, it's all appreciation, each one, but there's a different detail, a different prat of each aspect. Al-ha-chuois is the salvation. That's what we say every morning, every time in davening, Ki Lishu Oscha Kivinu Kol Hayoim, in your redemption. Einoid Milvadoi, that our redemption came about because of the Yeshua that you created for us. And the meaning of a Yeshua refers to directly your hand. The Alha Milchomois, if it came to it. And we went out into battle and there was a conflict. The word milchoma means the help at the time of stress, of anxiety, of war, of battle, of uprising, which we'll see is part of the Nes of Hanukkah. Now look carefully, because the meaning, the wording of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah has a specific twist to it. She'osiso lavoiseinu bayomim hohein bazman hazeh. The meaning is that you did for our fathers Hanukkah, specifically about the wars which they had against the Hellenists, and in particular the miracle of the oil. But the meaning is bayomim hohem, in those times. Now literally translated means bazman hazeh, at this time, on the kof hay, on the 25th of Kislev, we have Hanukkah. So at this time. But Chazal and the Ramchal in Derech Hashem in particular learns this out a little differently. Bayomim hohem, it happened in those times. As we know, the miracle of Hanukkah took place during Bayis Sheni, towards the end of Bayis Sheni, we're going to see in a second. And the wording Bazman Hazeh refers to and in our times. Bayomim Hohem, in those days, or Bazman Hazeh, and in our time. At that, this time, on the 25th of Kislev, Bayomim Hohem, in those times, at this date, but in an addition, there's an allusion to that the same miracles occur in these times as well. And the Ramchal explains with a principle which goes through the whole of the Luach. The Luach, the calendar, is by no means historical. When it comes again to any of the Yom Tovim, we go back into the same period as took place in the history of the Jewish people. That's why the night of the 15th of Nisan is called, again, Leil Shimurim. Once again, it's a night of Shimurim, of protection. Like we were protected then, we go back into the scene. The 6th of Sivan every year is again, we stand at Sinai. It's a historical event which repeats itself. And the Ramchal goes into great detail. If you want to look it up, it's in Chelek Dalad, Perek He. And he explains that the calendar is always recurring back again. It's not we celebrate like they celebrate Thanksgiving or, I don't know, Columbus or whatever happened in history. By us, the event returns again. Whether it's Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, once again we sit under the Anane HaKovod with Yoshpizin, and therefore Yom Tov is alive. It's current. And it is meaningful to us in our times. Bayomim Hohein was the time when it began, or Bizman Hazeh also. And it's critical we have this emphasis. Otherwise you just think it's historical. Well, I'm not a historian and I don't need to celebrate. No, that's not true. The event repeats itself. And all the Ramchal explains, the tremendous Siyata Dishmaya, the great help which was given in Shamayim, repeats itself for us in these times. And that's why we are so careful, for example, on the night of Shavuos, to stay up all night and learn Torah and stand again and listen. And Chazal always explained that when you hear the Aseres Adibros on Shavuos, you must close your eyes and imagine you are standing at Sinai and hearing the words again, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's not historical. The events all return back again. If that's the case, then when we learn Al HaNisim, we must learn it with a certain angle. On the one hand, we must examine what the historical perspective was. On the other hand, we must see the relevance in our times. And that's what I'd like to do with Al HaNisim. See it from both sides. We're going to divide it up this week and next week into different sections, but at the same time, to look how that particular phrase is relevant in our times. But before we do, we must take a glance into history and see the background behind Hanukkah. It'll help tremendously to give like the scenario, the reka, the background to what's going on. We must begin at the end of the time of Anshei Knesset HaGdoila. As you know, when Klal Yisrael left Eretz Yisrael and they went to Bavel, we began the period called the Men of the Great Assembly. Originally, the Men of the Great Assembly were made up of Nevi'im, Malachi, Haggai, Mordechai was one as well. But then, right at the very, very end, the last of all of Anshei Knesset HaGdoila was someone called Shimon HaTzadik. He was Mishyari, as the Mishnah says, a novice. He was one of the last of the Men of the Great Assembly. There was nobody else, as far as I know. One other person in the whole of the history of Klal Yisrael was given the name Tzadik. Yosef HaTzadik and Shimon HaTzadik. He was a young man when he came to be Kohen Gadol. He took over from Ezra as the Kohen Gadol. And Chazal explained, there's a Gemara which explains that when Shimon HaTzadik was Kohen Gadol, when they did the duchening in the Beis HaMikdash, when the Birchas Kohanim took place, the Kohanim used to mention the Shem Havaya, the actual 42 letters. It's Gemara in Tosfos, that Lamed Ches Lamed Aleph. And Tosfos says, but after the time of Shimon HaTzadik, they never mentioned again the name when they said, Yivorecho Hashem V'yishmerecho, they stopped. Why? Because there was no, after Shimon HaTzadik died, there was no longer any clear recognition of the Divine Presence. In the time of Shimon HaTzadik, there was. He was that great. He was an outstanding tzaddik, as the name says. Shimon HaTzadik, Yosef HaTzadik. Why is it significant here to start from this point? Because Alexander the Great, on his whole conquest of the world, was coming closer to Eretz Yisrael, and they were terrified in Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash of what would be the outcome. They delegated Shimon HaTzadik to go and meet Alexander. And when they got closer together, Alexander, who's also a young man, as soon as he saw the vision of the Kohen Gadol dressed in all his begodim, the Torah and everything that he wore, and the Choshen and the Me'il, Alexander leapt down from his horse and prostrated himself in front of Shimon HaTzadik. And they all asked him why, and he explained that whenever he went out into battle, the night before, he always saw a vision of this man. Shimon HaTzadik came in front of him, and therefore he said, I accept. And then Shimon HaTzadik asked that the Korbanah should carry on, there should be no antagonism against them, and Alexander agreed, and there was an agreement made. So long as Alexander was alive, he allowed all the Avodah to carry on in the Beis HaMikdash. That's one of the reasons why they made a promise to Alexander that all the children would be named Alexander. That's why we get the name Alexander in Klal Yisrael from Alexander the Great. They also made another promise in the time that Chazal promised Alexander that all documents would be numbered according to his name, according to his empire. In other words, all legal, it's called in Minyan Shtoris. Minyan Shtoris means that all documents are listed according to the calendar date of the empire of Alexander the Great. That's where, and it's all because of his greatness. The Gaon brings down in Biyoy HaGodas that this Minyan Shtoris, meaning from the time of Alexander, was also signified 1,000 years from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the end of all prophecy in Klal Yisrael. So it's a very significant time when Shimon HaTzadik met Alexander and the Avodah was allowed to carry on his greatness. And there was a tremendous Hisoverus in the Beis HaMikdash at that time, second Beis HaMikdash. A little time after, we're going to go off into history because it's important to know the background of Hanukkah. A short time after that, the Greek Empire began to, after Alexander died, began to have its claws, and they became far more pervasive in their ability to change the culture through the Hellenism. If you remember, there was a king, one of the kings, Ptolemy, who was one of the Greek rulers, insisted that Chazal translate the Chumash. And he took 72 Zkenim and put them each in a single room. And they weren't allowed to talk to each other. And each one had to translate the Chumash. Gemara in Megillah, Daf Tes. And miraculously, every single one came out with the same translation. Even there are passages in the Chumash where there were questions where the goyim could take it and have the wrong meaning, and every time they accurately corrected, the Gemara goes into different examples, 15 different places where goyim, if they would understand it, they would learn it a different way, and they all changed the translation and translated the Chumash into Greek. It wasn't a happy time for Klal Yisrael. The reason was because it was then in their hands. Until that time, the Chumash was always out of their hands. It was called in English the Septuagint. The Septuagint, Talgum Shivim, was the Goyim then had a control over the Chumash, and they had it in their hands, and then they started saying it was all theirs, and that's where all the problems came in. The Chachamim were not pleased that this was done, but that was the time. In other words, we were encroached more and more into the Kedusha of the Torah and everything that it represented. Eventually, the cruelest of all rulers came to power, and his name was Antiochus Epiphanes. He was also given another name, Antiochus Epimenes. Epiphanes means the famous, the powerful. Epimenes means the Meshuggah. He was violently cruel. He was a wild, wild man. And as soon as he took control, all the relaxation that had been granted to the Klal Yisrael during the time of Alexander were all wiped away. He forbade the study of Torah. He forbade Shmiras Shabbos. He cancelled out any avodah of Rosh Chodesh. He annulled having Bris Milah. It was a time of tremendous persecution for Klal Yisrael. It reached the worst point of all when he brought Behemoth Timaeus into the Beis HaMikdash and made sacrifices with them, and eventually he annulled the avodah of the Korban Tomid, Antiochus. And the Bach brings down in Tofresh Ayin that they then told him, as now we're coming right into Hanukkah, if you really want to get Klal Yisrael, then you must cancel out the avodah of the menorah. Because the Ha'alos Neil Tomid is the greatest, because the light of Judaism comes out through the menorah, and therefore they were told that you really have to try and cancel out the menorah. And that's where they were metame kol hashmanim, and here we are into Hanukkah. That's the whole avodah. There was tremendous, tremendous Mesiras Nefesh of the Jewish people. We have the whole story about Miriam Bas Tanchum with her seven sons who gave up their lives for Torah, and they all hid in caves, and they practiced Shabbos and Bris Milah and Rosh Chodesh. There was a tremendous uprising of Hisoros until we get eventually the time of Matisyo, Kohen Godel, and his five sons. All went out to battle against multitudes of Greek soldiers, and we see because of their great Mesiras Nefesh and sacrifice, they were privileged to have tremendous Siyata Dishmaya in their behavior, and they conquered the Greek army miraculously. All four children were killed in the battle, and he was left with one son who took over. And they conquered over the Greek with their great sacrifices. They managed to overcome the Greek Empire, and that began the term, the period of the Hashmonaim dynasty. Chazal bring out the Ramban in Parshas Vayechi that one of the reasons why the children were killed in the battle is because the Hashmonaim went too far. They took on the mantle of the monarchy, which was only reserved, as you know, for Shevet Yehuda, Malchus Beis David. And the Hashmonaim, who were Kohanim, took into control the royalty, the Malchus, which they were not allowed to. So they usurped that power from Shevet David, from Malchus Beis David. That's why they were punished in the end. It didn't last, the Hashmonaim. But in the meantime, that brings us really to the background of Hanukkah, from Alexander, through Ptolemy, through the time of Antiochus, through the decrees, and then we begin to understand what's going on about the whole uprising of the Hashmonaim and how it all materialized. The actual nature of the Yom Tov of Hanukkah is really explained in a Maimah by Reb Yeruchim in Daras Chochma Umusa. If you want to look it up, it's Chelek Aleph, page 9, right at the very page 15, right at the beginning of the Ma'amorim of Reb Yeruchim, and he explains the Yom Tov of Hanukkah is a Yom Tov labeled of Mesiras Nefesh, of sacrifice, of efforts which were made. Let's give the background, and then really we're going to make distinctions later between Hanukkah and Purim. What is the nature of the Yom Tov of Hanukkah and the nature of the Yom Tov of Purim? The Bach in Simon Tov Reish Ayin explains In the time of Purim in Shushan, they were forbidden to attend the banquet by Ahasuerus, and they went, and it was an offense. It was wrong. As a result, they had to fast. Esther said, Sumu alai, and therefore the simcha of Yom Tov of Purim is that of feasting and the banquet. It was all against their physical lives, which they had enjoyed the banquet, and as a result they fasted, and as a result we have Simchas Yom Tov. The nature of Chanukah is not like that. And the Bach explains, the reason why the persecution began in the time of the Antiochus was because the Koyanim were lax in their Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Nisrashnu me'avodah. They were not as enthusiastic. Eventually, when they realized that the scheme was to go from the Korban Tomid to the Shemen and to attack Klal Yisrael with the Shemen and to Metamei Kodesh, then they took tremendous efforts and sacrifice to change that around, and they searched when all the time you can bring Shemen Tuma. You don't have to have Shemen Toho in the Beis HaMikdash. Tuma Hutra Betziba. You could bring in the Neiros of the Menorah Shemen which was unclean. But they, with Mesiras Nefesh, they went further. Mahadrin Mena Mahadrin. Really, that aside a second, but that's the whole avoid of Chanukah is that of self-sacrifice. That's the nature of the Yom Tov. Therefore, says Rabbi Yerucham, based on that Bach, the nature of the miracles of Chanukah was that of miracles geluyim, of remarkable siyata dishmai, remarkable help that they received from Shamayim. It's quite different from Purim. That's behind the Yom Tov of Purim, of Chanukah. It's not one of feasting. It's not one of a suda. Chanukah is more of Torah, of Hallel. There's no Hallel on Purim. There's Hallel on Chanukah. Lehoidos or Lehallel. It's a Yom Tov of Torah, a Yom Tov of Mesiras Nefesh. That's the nature of the Yom Tov. Therefore, let's begin, and with that background, I hope we can discover today two or three passages of Al HaNisim. B'yemei Matisyo ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai Uvonov. We are told that the miracle of Chanukah occurred in the time of Matisyo, who was the son of Yochanan Gadol Chashmonai Uvonov. Look on the other side. We're told by Purim, B'yemei Mordechai Be'Esther B'Shushan Habira. What's the meaning behind this? Why are we told these names? And we must also look a little bit deeper. What's behind the names? Every period of Golus and eventual Geula of Klal Yisrael is always centered on the sacrifice of the leaders. Moshe and Aaron in Mitzrayim. It was tremendous sacrifice of these two, the pairs, who went down into Paray and went into the palace with tremendous fear of what might happen, of the consequences. Mordechai and Esther in Shushan, the dedication and the self-sacrifice of these two. He gave up Esther, his so-called wife, as they say, Chazal explained, and gave her over to Ahasuerus. And Esther lived a life, living with a menuvel all her life, just to save Klal Yisrael. Nafshi b'sheilosi v'ami b'vakoshosi. She gave up everything for Klal Yisrael, the Mesiras Nefesh. So it is with these in the time of the Chanukah. Matisyo and Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Reb Tzadok explains in Pri HaTzadik, that in the name Matisyo is Matnas Elokim, Matono Hashem, Yochanan, Hashem Chonan. The names are telling us that the Siyata Dishmaya, the help that they received from the Ribono Shel Olam, matched their own sacrifice that they did, and that brought about the Geula. It's a very significant point to understand this, the nature of the Yeshua which came about. It came about because of their sacrifices. They gave up so much for Klal Yisrael. So it is in each period that we see in Klal Yisrael. But we must go a little bit deeper, because the real background of Chanukah and Matisyo Kohen Gadol and the Chashmonaim, the Ramban brings down in Parshas Bahaloscha. This is really where it all began. The great Rosh Yeshiva from Be'er Yaakov, where Moshe Shmuel Shapiro always used to learn out that Chanukah really begins from the time of Chanukas HaMizbeach. Let me put you into the scene. At the time of the dedication of the Mizbeach, in Parshas Bahaloscha, says the Pasuk, Aaron cholsho daitoi, became disillusioned. He became weak. He was broken. Why? Because every shevet brought by the Chanukas HaMizbech, except the Levim, they were not given anything at all. And Aaron said, what about me and my chelek? Says the Ramban, your chelek will be even greater than the other shvotim. Why? Because you will be meitiv es haneiros, you will have the korbonos, you are upon the kohanim. Meaning that the avoida of the kohanim was referred to as being greater than that of the other shvotim, because you will always have the avoida if in the Beis HaMikdash. The question which the Ramban asked is that nevertheless there is still a misgiving, there is still an anxiety which Aaron had. What was that? When the Shvotim provided for the dedication of the Mizbeach in the Midbar, their efforts were done the Nediva slave. They were done with great free will. Aaron was told to do the Avodah of the Menorah. Where was his sacrifice? Where was his personal Nediva slave? He was obliged to bring the Ketores. He was obliged to go in on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol. And therefore the Ramban asked, why was he appeased, Aaron, by being told that he would be Metiv Es HaNeiros, if after all, he was obliged to do that? And the Shvotim, the Nesim, when they brought by the Chanukah HaMizbeach, they all did it with a Nediva slave. The answer is, and the Ramban doesn't answer it clearly, we need to answer and look carefully into the Ramban. The answer is that Ramban says, you will have Chanukah. What does it mean that you will have Chanukah of the Chashmonaim? The Chashmonaim will act Mehadrin Mina Mehadrin. They will go further than the call of duty. Then the Koyanim, the Chashmonaim, went much, much further than they had to do. They could have turned back and said, well, you can take Shem and Tomei and light the menorah with a Shemen which is unclean, and that's good enough. Tuma Hutu Betzibo, you don't have to have. For the benefit of the community, for the whole Beis HaMikdash, you can bring Shem and Tomei. They didn't want that. They went much further than that. By their own free will, they insisted on searching for a Pach Toha, for a clean, for one Shem and Toha. They went further than the call of duty. And that is the nature of the sacrifice of the Chashmonaim, and that's why Aaron was appeased. That's the meaning of the Ramban. That later, in later generations, you'll see Aaron, your mishpacha, because the Chashmonaim were Kohanim, Levim, from you will come a Yom Tov where they will go further than the call of duty. And therefore, the whole nature of the Yom Tov of Chanukah is one of Mesiras Nefesh, of sacrifice. Bayomim Hohaim. Now, Bizman Hazeh, how does that apply to us in our times? If we're going to take Chanukah and make it as a realistic Yom Tov, as the Ramchal learns out, Bizman Hazeh, in our times, it means as follows. And perhaps I refer to what we said last week. I thought the best example we could do is this. Every single day, at 12-hour shifts, that's what we said last week, we declare as an Eidus, as a testimony, V'yahavto es Hashem Elokecho b'chol levavecho u'b'chol nafshecho b'chol meyodecho v'hoyu hadvarim ho'ele asher anoichi metzavecho hayoim al levavecho. We are obliged every 12 hours to remind ourselves to act in love for Hashem's mitzvahs b'chol nafshecho, with all our soul, with everything that we can. Remember, we mentioned that it refers to Mesiras Nefesh, B'chol Nafshecho. Ultimately, the final stage of Mesiras Nefesh is one gives up one's life for Torah and Mitzvahs. But any level of sacrifice in Torah and Mitzvahs refers to Mesiras Nefesh. When? Asher Anoichi Metzavecho Hayoim Al Levavecho. The meaning is, at all times, we're supposed to act with Mesiras Nefesh. It's not enough to take it laissez-faire, like a comme-ci, comme-ça, when I'm in the mood, when it's convenient. Shema is telling us that the avo for Hashem and his mitzvahs and our dedication, whether it's for davening, whether it's for learning Torah, whether it's for tznius, whether it's for chesed, we must act always b'chol nafshecha, with a sacrifice to it, everybody according to their dalga. But that's what we're saying all the time. If we're saying we're celebrating Chanukah by Yomim Ha'ein, but Bizman Azeh, we keep on saying over and over, V'ahavta b'chol nafshecha hayoim, today, each day. And if you look carefully, further than any period after Chanukah, the only reason why any redemption came about for our people always was a result of the Mesiras Nefesh, the sacrifice which was done. It's the most beautiful story in London, always they told of, in Schneider's yeshiva. When Moshe Schneider was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim, who started a yeshiva up for, basically for boys who were refugees from Europe and Stamford Hill, and in his yeshiva he provided all that they needed. Their parents, many of them were killed in the war, and the famous Rav Moshe Schneider in his yeshiva, he had there in his yeshiva two bochurim who had tremendous self-sacrifice. One of them every single day used to get up early in the morning and go to Grudzinski's, they say, which was the bakery, and collect the bread which Grudzinski made and gave free to the yeshiva, and brought it at 5-6 o'clock in the morning in the cold. He used to trundle out there and bring for the yeshiva the breads early in the morning. There was another bacher who took tremendous sacrifice and took it upon himself to go around the yeshiva and waking everybody, every bacher up, to get them to come to davening every morning. Who were they? The first one became, they were both called Moshe. The first one became Rav Moshe Reichman in Toronto, and he eventually supplied all of Klal Yisrael as the great philanthropist helping all the Moistas HaTorah. He was the one who went to Grudzinski's to collect the bread, and Rav Moshe Sternbach, Shia Bari, was the bacher who woke up all the bacherim in yeshiva to get them up earlier. These two Rav Moshes became later on, because of their Mesiras Nefesh, one for materialism, for the food, and one for the spiritual side, became Rav Moshe Reichman and Rav Moshe Sternbach. Just as an incident, I remember I once went to Toronto and I said that out, said over the Maisa, and one of the family members, Reichman, turned over to me and says, "Yes, but you don't know what Zayda said." He said, "He wished he'd have gone around waking the Bochum up every morning. He would have preferred to have that chelik than the chelik of all the finances." That's what he said. Oh, but the Mesiras Nefesh, the sacrifice, that's what it means. By Yomim Ha'ein Bizman Azeh, I learned in the Kollel of the Mir Yeshiva. There are unbelievable stories which are going on around about Reb Nosson Tzvi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva. The one which stayed with me, which I can't forget, I mean, over and over I keep on thinking over it, is the one story about Reb Nosson Tzvi, his tremendous self-sacrifices, but this really sums it up, in my eyes. A group of businessmen came in from America, big businessmen, and they were taken round Yerushalayim, and one of them was Howard Schultz, the chairman of Starbucks, and he was brought to Geula, and then they took them in to Reb Nosson Tzvi. And they told him that you wait in his house and he'll talk to you for a few minutes. They sat there in the room and he writes, Mr. Schultz writes exactly what happened. They were sitting in the room and they waited 10-15 minutes and they waited for him to come in, a group of 5 or 6 businessmen, whoever they were, I don't know who the others were. Eventually he came in, Reb Nosson Tzvi, and it was clear the minute he walked in he was severely, severely crippled from his Parkinson's. He walked with a very, very strange gait, and they felt very embarrassed. And he writes that as he came in and he sat down at the head of the table, all of them looked down because they were too embarrassed to look at him, because his Parkinson's was so bad, he was moving around on the table and he looked so strange, so they, out of embarrassment, they didn't want to look at him. Evidently, that went on for a half a minute or so, and they heard a bang on the table. And the Rosh Yeshiva turned around and says, "Gentlemen, look up now and look at me in the face. Look at me." So they all stared at him. He said, "Gentlemen, please tell me, what lesson do we learn from the Holocaust?" So he all sat there. What's this got to do with anything? He said to them, "Gentlemen, I don't want to take up much of your time. You're busy. You're businessmen from America. I want to ask you one question. What do we learn from the Holocaust?" So they all sat there, dumbfounded. And he turned around and said, "Please tell me, sir, what do you learn as a big businessman? What do you learn from the Holocaust?" So he fumbled and he was a bit embarrassed. And he turned around and he said, "Well, we learned that we must never, ever forget them." Bruno said, "No way. You didn't get the point." Turned around to another businessman, and Mr. Schultz said, he was like going under the table hoping he wouldn't ask him. He was sweating. He said, "I hope he's not going to ask me." He asked him, "What do you learn from it?" He turned around and he said, "You learn from the Holocaust that the Jewish people must never ever be pushed around like that before." He said, "No, you don't get the point." He turned to these big businessmen. Mr. Schultz was there. He said, "I'll tell you what you learn from the Holocaust. I'll tell you." He said, "You know that the cattle trucks, they were taken in and they were pushed in without any hygienic facilities, any heating. Like cattle, they were pushed into the truck. And then they were taken for hours and hours until they arrived at the camp, and then the doors opened. When the doors opened, they thought they were going to work. The men were taken there, the women were taken one there. They thought they were going to work, but they're going to a death camp. They were all sorted out, and what the Germans used to do is they used to give each one of them a blanket to be shared amongst six people," Reb Nosson Zvi said. "It was always one for six, one blanket for six. Then they were told to go to sleep." Reb Nosson Zvi said to them, "That person who was holding the blanket, what did he do with the blanket? Did he go to sleep and cover himself? Or did he push it onto the other five people who was it supposed to be prepared for?" Said Reb Nosson Zvi, "They pushed the blanket every time and covered another six, five people. That shows the nature of the human spirit of a Jew." Said Reb Nosson Zvi, "Gentlemen, I don't want to take up any of your time. I just want you to know one thing." And he stood up. "Go back to America. Take the blanket and cover, please, another five people. Good day." And walked out. The man was a cripple. He was severely inhibited in his speech. He refused to be looked at as a sick man. He was determined to give a message over to these businessmen. "You each have a blanket," meaning you're multimillionaires. "Take the blanket and go and look after others. That's what we learn from the Holocaust. Those who are left must come out with the human spirit of a Jew. That's what they had in the Holocaust, and that's what you businessmen are obliged to do when you go back to America." The Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh of Rosh Yeshiva, to speak to them in such a way, to disregard his own crippleness and his own disability, but to tell them, that's what you're here for. As a Jew, the human spirit is to give over and to share to others and take care of other people. That's, I believe, what we mean by Yamim Hohein Bazman Hazeh. They showed great sacrifice, and perhaps Shema is urging us, every time we say Shema, to act with Mesiras Nefesh in our, to be more dedicated in our tefillah, more dedicated in our limud Torah, in our charity, in our chesed, towards a fellow Jew. That's by Yomi Mohein Bizman Azeh. Kishaomdo Malchus Yovan Horosho al Amcho Yisrael. We are told what was the nature of the persecution of the Greeks. Maybe we'll do a switch. Let's look at the other side first, and then you'll see Hanukkah. It's quite different. Purim was, Kishaomad Aleim Homod Orosha, this was a final solution. By Homon, it was Lahashmid Laharogu La'abedis Kola Yehudim. That was a wipeout. That was an Auschwitz. That was an early day Auschwitz in Purim. Hanukkah is quite different. There was nothing like that. Their interest was the evil. What was the evil? What was the evil of Yavon? It was Lahashkicham Torasecho. It was to make them forget their spiritual connection to Torah. Ulahaviram mechukei utzanecha. That was the evil of the Yavon. In English, they would say, They went for the jugular. They went for the lifeline. Haman went for the people. Yovan went for the whole source of the neshama of a Jew. Torah and what Hashem wants. Mechukei v'tzaynecha. But what is specific here is that the nature of the persecution. For this we must look a little bit into research in Bereishis Rabba, in the Medrash. The Medrash brings out by Gan Eden that there were four rivers which flowed out of Gan Eden. Pishon and Gihon, Chidekel and Poras, four rivers. The Medrash explains that the four rivers represented the four periods of exile of the Jewish nation. Pishon was Bavel. The word Pishon is from the word Poshu. Nebuchadnezzar was like a bulldozer in the Beis HaMikdash. Mamash, he stormed in like a bull in a china shop. Mamash, devastated it. That was Pishon. Pishon is the devastation. Like, to completely destroy a magnificent building. That was Nebuchadnezzar, Pishon. Gihon was Poras u'Modai. Haman, you remember the expression, al gechoynecha seilech, the nochosh was insipid. He was cunning. Haman was cunning in his decree. Do you remember how he did it with Achashverosh? He said, Yesh am echad mefusa beinu amim, there's one nation amongst your nation and they don't keep your laws. So invite them to a banquet and get them to commit cardinal sins in the Jewish religion, and then the job will be done by itself. We don't have to do any more than that. That was a cunning. It's called in the terms in Chazal, analila gedoyla, a tremendous cunning. That was like a snake. Haman was cunning. He was insipid. He was like a snake. He crawled along and he tried his way to wheedle his way to get the Jewish. He couldn't do it himself because he wasn't the king. But he suggested through his advice and his innuendos, he got his way around with Achashverosh. That's Poras. Chidekel, let's leave it a second. Chidekel is Yovan. Poras is Edom, the final decree, which is Edom, which is what we're going through. Let's come back to Chidekel though. Chazal explained that Golas Yovan was represented by the river Chidekel. What does Chidekel mean? Chidekel is two words in one. Chad the Kal. Sharp and light. I once heard from a Brevner, a beautiful marshal, what does it mean, the Gezeiros of Lahashkichon Tayosecho, Lahavigon Mechukei Watsonecho? A top surgeon in a hospital, his real skill is that he knows how to get in and get out quickly without you feeling it. He's sharp and light, but he gets in. That's the real skill. To be so expertise, you get in and you don't feel it. It's sharp and light. That was Chidekel. Their culture was a culture of tremendous enticement, circuses, Olympics, buildings, theater, science, the whole idea of really the American culture, no? The whole point of education and music and the whole Greek ideology is based on the beauty of life, the culture, and it's so exciting it entices you away. It's so sharp and light, if you get too much involved in sport, in theater, in music, in science, in philosophy, before you know it, it's got in and it's pulled away your neshama and you're already caught into it. It's the yofi. Chazal explained, Yaft Elokim leyefet, v'yishkoim ba'oh leishem. The real persecution of the Greeks was that they enticed the Jewish nation away, not by a bulldozer, not by death camps, but by pulling them in a most enjoyable way, and before you know it, you lose your neshama. Yaft Elokim leYefet. It was beautiful. The Tshuvas HaRosh brings down that, as we mentioned already, this was the period when the Chumash was translated into Greek. Why? Why was it allowed to be translated? It's a memo of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the Gemara in Megillah, because the Greek language was so beautiful they allowed it to be translated. In the end, it led to the detriment of Torah. But it's enticing, the circuses, the intellectual, the stimulation, the academia, that pulled you in, and because of that, you lost your Jewish connection. It was a very, very select way of persecuting the Jewish nation. That's what they wanted. That was Hellenism. That's the basis of Hellenism. And therefore, you get pulled away through all the culture, and before you know it, you've lost it. You're into that world. I have a friend who I grew up with, and he was a genius at languages. He received a scholarship to go to Oxford, and he studied languages there, and he was everywhere. We learned together everything about it. He went to Oxford. I think by the second year he was didn't keep a thing. By the third year in college he was gone completely. He was totally into the university life, in the music, in the theater, and everything. He lost all his Judaism because of his great, he was gifted intellectually, and eventually got pulled in by the studies of everything. And that's what it means. That's what Hellenism does. You lose all your Yiddishkeit by it. To be very careful. Otherwise one can, the Ribbono Shel Olam is removed completely out of the scene. Maybe we can bring a Gemara in Nida Daf Ayin. The Gemara asks a question, which is really what's you and I, the street that we live on. The Gemara asks a question. In the street they ask, Ma yase odom yechochom? How does a person become a wise man? So the Gemara says, people say, Mabe be yeshiva, you have to sit down and study a great deal, and eventually you'll become a wise man. The Gemara turns around and says, Habe osu kein v'lo olsalam lo yodom. Many people sat and studied for years and years and they didn't become wise. No, how come? Says the Gemara, because that's not the answer. Yavakesh racham mimisha chochma shaloi. You have to turn around to the Ribbono Shel Olam and ask him, please, help me, ki Hashem yiten chochma, mipiv da'asu tvuno. Chochma comes from Siyata Dishmaya, from the Ribbono Shel Olam. You have to turn to him. Ma yase odom miyasha? How does a man become wealthy? Says the Gemara, ma be b'schoira? You have to be 24 hours in business and make a lot of money. Says the Gemara, halva osu kein v'lo osu b'yodom. They never made a dime. They're broke. And yet they work day and night and they're not rich. How come? Says the Gemara, says, no, yavakesh rachamim mimisha oisha shaloi. Kili akesev v'li azov. Ribbono Shel Olam holds all the stores of the finances and the treasury. You have to ask him for it. In the street, they say it's all man-made. It's all kaychev oisim yodi. In reality, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam who hands it all out. That's what they tried to do. The nature of Yovan is to tease you away in a different culture. Reb Chaim Friedlander brings down in Sifsei Chaim, Yovan is the same as Yoina. Same letters. Yovan is a masculine form. Yoina is a feminine form. Klal Yisrael anim shru liyoina, to a dove. The menorah is using the olive oil. The national symbol of Greece is the olive. What's the difference? The oil is put into the menorah and it draws its light from there. In other words, you receive, it's the menorah is a mekabel. The menorah takes the oil and holds it, receives it. The olive itself is brilliant. But we don't have the olive, we have the menorah, the kibul. A yoina, a female, is mekabel. We receive our chochma. Choneinu me'itcho deya. Please Hashem, give me chochma. Let me be a receptacle. Torah is you receive from Hashem. By Greece, it's in essence brilliant. but there's no reception. It's a yonah, it's a male form, not a female form. The beauty of a Talmud Chacham is that he himself might be industrious and ingenious, but the representation of his wisdom is all an image of the Ribono Shel Olam. There's a Hakdama in the Zohar. Right at the beginning of the Zohar, a philosopher asked Reb Shimon Bar Yochai the following question. The Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Kol Chochmosom is incomparable to the Chochma of the Goyim. They're Goyim. Me'ein kamoicha chochmosecha. Says the philosopher, Me'ein kamoicha, that means by the Goyim, there's nothing comparable to the Chochma of the Torah, of Hashem, by the Goyim. But the implication, said the philosopher to Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, is that the Jewish people are, yes, similar to Hashem. Me'ein kamoicha u'malchusam. Thy be non-Jews, there's no comparison. But apparently, said the philosopher to Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, amongst the Jewish people, there is a similarity to Hashem in their Chochmah. What does it mean? And the philosopher asked Reb Shimon, isn't my idea correct? By the non-Jews there isn't a similar Me'ein kamoicha, but by the Jews there is. And Reb Shimon Bar Yochai turned around and said to him, you're 100% correct. Meaning, just like Hashem is Mechaye Meisim, so Eliyahu and Elisha revive the dead. Just like Hashem orders the sun and the moon to move, so Yehoshua stopped the sun. Meaning, there is a fraction of Hashem in a Talmud Chacham. He represents the Almighty in his Chochmah, in his wisdom. And Reb Shimon Bar Yochai Taman says, yes, you're quite right. And he immediately converted. The philosopher converted and became, in the Gemara, if you know, there's someone called Yosef Katina. Yosef Katina was a ger, and he converted based on this comment of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. You're right. In the Torah, he resembles Hashem. A Talmud Chacham is great because of his Yiras Shamayim. Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. The Yiras Shamayim, the input that he receives from the Almighty, that's what we keep on saying. That's the first bracha. Choneinu ato choinein la'odom das. It's you who give it. In the Greek terminology, it's all personal brilliance and individual intelligence. It's not coming from anywhere. Chazal explained the gematria of Yovan is 66. The gematria of Galgal is 66. A wheel. There's no up and down. There's no right and left. It just keeps on turning. Nature just keeps on revolving. Yovan, there's no Shamayim and there's no Gehinnom. There's no reward, there's no punishment. It's just nature. Like a wheel keeps on turning. That's Yovan. There's no divine input at all. There's no Almighty. It's just nature. The beauty, the goof, the body. It's just nature going over and on. That was the culture of Greece. The problem was, and the persecution which the Jewish people had, was that l'hashkichon toirosecho through the yoifi. Through the yoifi of Greece, that was the pitui. They drew them out of it. Yafta lakim leyefes. And that's what it means. V'yishkoim ba'ohalei Shein. Shein had chochma, which is Klal Yisrael. Yovan had chochma. They also, through their yoifi, they also were in the same camp as Yovan. One is personal brilliance, and one is brilliance from the Almighty. Did you ever think to yourself, from next week, and the week after, whenever it comes to Hanukkah, we're always involved with Yosef. Every year, it's always the same. The match for Hanukkah is always Yosef. Vayeshev, Vayigash, Miketz. Chazal explained that Yosef was a Yosayim. Yud, Tov, Vov, Mem. Says the Arizal, Yefei, Toya, Vifei Mare. Every challenge that Yosef had was based on beauty. He came from a lady, Rachel, who was Yefei Toya, Vifei Mare. He himself was exceptionally good looking. All the girls tried to get him to look at him. He had a test with a lady, the wife of Potiphar, who apparently was Yafei Toyav, Yafei Mare. I was thinking to myself, even the interpretation of the cows was with Poros Yofos. Everything was always Yofi, Yofi, Yofi by Yosef. Always a test of Yofi. And yet we know that Zohar brings down Omar HaPinchas, Miyom Sha'ola Al Daitoi, from the time Yosef became a thinking child, from the age of 5 or 6, Ad Yom Moisai, until the day he died, Lo Posko Mimeno Ruach HaKodesh. In all the Yofi, there was tremendous Kedusha. That's the match always for Chanukah. We match Yosef with Yavon. Yavon was brilliance and beauty with itself. Behind the beauty of Yosef was tremendous, tremendous. He was the Mishkan of the men in Mitzrayim. We know Sarah for the women and Yosef for the men. Tremendous Kedusha behind it. Yosef HaTzadik. Shivisi Hashem, because he always had Hashem on his lips. He was tremendously devoted in Devekus to Hashem in all his Nisyonos that he went through. That's the match always. And when we learn Lahashkichon Toyosecha Lahavigo Mechukei Watsanecha, this is the enticement of Yavon. That's by Yomim Hohein. Bizman Hazeh, goodness, isn't that the problem which we're facing in our times? With everything that we see around, the enticement of materialism doesn't stop. It's the whole pitui of our generation, that you get what you want and it's materialistic and there's nothing behind it. It's just beauty for its own benefit, the beauty of the clothing, the beauty of the guf, without any neshama behind it. There's no pnimius behind it. There's nothing inside it. I'm very fortunate to have connection with the Novominska Rebbe, Shir Bari. I once spent a Shabbos meal at his table. I was sitting at his table and something happened in the middle. He like went into a trance and he wasn't there with us. He was just like, he was thinking and he just was looking up and shaking his head, and he turned around and he said, a few other people, one person was sitting at the table with us, and he said, only the Ribbono Shel Olam can take us out of this problem. I turned around and said to him, what does the Rebbe mean? What is he talking about? And he realized he told us that 2 yeshivas in America that month were forced to close down because of the internet. They had to close the yeshivas. It was impossible to carry on. He said they had to close down the yeshivas. And I had to give the sanction that the yeshivas had to be closed down because the pitui of the internet, the laptop. The boys go into the bedroom at night and they have the laptop and basically they're on 42nd Street. It's just impossible. There's no barrier here. And that pitui goes right into the dormitories of the yeshivas and we can't stop it. Can't prevent it. He said, and therefore I said, only the Rebbeinu can take it. This is a problem we cannot solve ourselves. You need Siyata Dishmaya, that Hashem would help take us out of the problems of the internet and all what's going on in our door. It's not changed. Lahashkichon Toyosecho Lahaviro Mechukei Watsanecho was by Yamim Hohein. Goodness me, Bazman Hazeh, that is the enticement which we are faced with and our children are certainly faced with. The pitui of the Yofi, and it doesn't stop, it goes right into the Mishkan, into the yeshivas, into our homes. I remember hearing once from Rav Pinchas, the great problem of the internet and the problems with the computer is it used to be always that the Yetzer Hara was in the street. It was in the high street, in the main street, in downtown. That's where it was. What has now happened is the Rishus HaRavim has come right into the Rishus HaYochid. It's all the way inside the home. And that's the problem. And only the Rabbanu Shalom can take us out of it. Maybe that, ladies and gentlemen, is the key, Mitzvah Shem, for next week. V'yator b'rachamecho HaRavim. It was only with Rachmei Shomayim or Madad Alehem Be'es Tzorosam at the time of difficulty. I don't want to keep you anymore. Next week we'll carry on and finish off Al HaNisim, Bezus Hashem. A good vach, Shavua Tov.